today is John Skeet. John, how are you?
Hey, good to see you.
You work for Google, right?
I do. I have to say at the start of all interviews like this, I work for Google, but I'm not speaking on behalf of Google. If I say something stupid, don't assume that other people in Google think that as well. You know, this is just me.
Okay, we got that out of the way. That's good. Yeah. What if you say something evil?
Oh, no, no. That's
it's don't just be
not
evil.
No,
don't
no,
be
it's not
evil.
Fingers crossed.
All right, so it's before we get started, actually, I want to talk about why you came to my attention, which is that you are the most prolific answerer on Stack
on
Overflow.
Stack Overflow.
And you're
yes.
very famous for this, right?
Yes, it's quite a bizarre thing, actually. So I started 5 and a bit years ago on Stack Overflow after it had come out of beta, so I don't have the beta badge. Anyone with the beta badge has beaten me on
you
that
don't
front.
Have.
Yeah. And I've been posting on C# and Java newsgroups for a long time. If you look at the old Microsoft C# newsgroups and Kotlin Java Programmer, you'll see my name there with equal numbers of posts. So it really felt very natural going into Stack Overflow, and I'd never really liked web boards, forums, and things before, mm-hmm. but Stack Overflow was clearly... It was just implemented so well. The preview for the markdown and everything.
They removed a lot of the friction that's involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was clearly involved in just getting the right answer.
Yes.
And I took off, enjoyed it right from the very, very start. I think I hit the rep cap on the first day. I only got into there. I was reading Sarah Chip's blog, and it mentioned it, and I had a look and looked for any mentions of my book, C# in depth, and sort of added a couple of comments and things, answered a few questions, and I was hooked immediately.
Excellent.
I realized I would be addicted because I blogged that very afternoon saying, this is going to be my new addiction. It was
I guess the addiction goes, there are worse ones.
Absolutely. I reckon I've got quite an addictive personality. I've never done any gambling online because I know if I started, it would be really hard to stop.
Like these fruity drinks here.
lovely frou-frou cocktails. Yay. Yeah, I figure if I'm going to be addicted to something, it should be something positive.
Excellent. I think I would say that Stack Overflow is enhanced by you and a few other people that are really generating a lot of answers.
I think that's true to some extent, but it's overstated in that I reckon a lot of the answers that I post generally pretty quickly after seeing a question, if I didn't post an answer, someone else probably would.
Okay.
Yeah, I do it
fair enough
because I enjoy it huge amounts, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think if you took the top 5% of posters out, a lot of the rest of the posters would cover the same kind of ground.
Just a little bit slower.
Yeah, a little bit slower. I would like to think that I managed to get my ideas across in a particular way. It's just a fabulous resource that I think has transformed the lives of many developers.
Agreed.
I remember at the Stack Overflow Dev Days back a few years ago now, Jeff Hapwood came on stage and said if they were trying to get the search working better to spot potential duplicates for the question you're about to ask. Mm. And he said something like, we want to get this right so that you can find another person's question, not just because it's better for the site if there's one well-asked question and whatever, but also so that you don't have to wait the 20 minutes it'll take you to get an answer. It's like, wow, things have changed.
Yeah,
it
20
used
minutes.
To be that you would post something on your newsgroup, and if you... replied again saying, whoa, why has no one answered this question? Within like 24 hours, you were seen as being really impatient. And on Stack Overflow, if you don't get an answer within 10 minutes, it's fairly rare. And to be honest, by then, your question's going to be off the front page.
Right.
But usually you will have an answer within that 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's astonishing.
It is. And now you live in the UK, but you're here in Sandusky, Ohio, of all places, because of Codemash.
It's really cold, I have to say. It's insanely cold here. Yeah, this is my third year here.
That's excellent.
What
are you speaking on this
year? It's so much fun. So this year I'm speaking on applied API design, which sounds insanely boring.
No, it doesn't. Tell me
more. This started off with a conference in Oslo, NDC, which is a fabulous conference as well.
I haven't been.
It's brilliant. Okay. Oslo's lovely.
I've never been to Oslo.
It's a fabulous conference. So I did a session with Rob Connery.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, before TechPub was bought by Pluralsight, this was a TechPub Unleashed or Unplugged or Unsomethinged. And the idea was just, we're doing raw coding. Rob gives me a challenge. I write some code.
Oh, this became a TechPub course.
No, I don't... I don't think it became a course. He may have done it as a video, but it was it was just an hour session of give John a task. He's done this with other people as well. Give John a task and see what happens, so that people can see how my mind works, because they apparently want to. I don't know why. And we were trying to work out what this should be, so it's not quite as impromptu as it's made to see. You have no idea what I'm going to ask you to do. No. We kicked a few things around, and I mentioned that at a previous company, I finished one project in an afternoon. I say finished it in an afternoon, as in one afternoon I finished a project that I was working on, and it was Friday at 3 o'clock, and there's no way I'm going to start a new project at that point. And I think it was the company party that evening. So I said to my tech lead, Joe, how about just as a sort of mind-expanding thing, I see whether I can implement Tetris in an hour, a console version of Tetris. And he said, I'll go on then. Mm-hmm. So I did, and it was great fun, and I just about got a working version of Tetris.
In Java?
In C-sharp.
C-sharp, okay.
In an hour. And I thought it would be interesting to go back to that sort of experience and see what we could get done in an hour with WPF. I thought we would use WPF. We didn't actually get as far as a UI at all. It was all, well, what should it look like as a project? So I thought it would be fun to do this functionally. You know, I've heard a lot about this functional programming thing. I like immutability. Let's see what would happen. So we literally just started coding up the model part of it and got input from the audience as we went along, some really good input. It was very clear as we went along when my mind was changed about things. So I started off with a particular... I have an enum of the types of shape that there are, the L, the S, the T, and whatever. And in .NET, often you have a none value for an enum. And so I did follow the conventions, and then I have a board with the tiles, and so they start off as shape type dot none. And it niggled at me. There was something wrong with this. Mm. And it was only about halfway through that I said, do you know what? Oh, screw that. Let's change this up, get rid of the none, and instead make the array an array of nullable type, shape type. And it made so much more sense, because then whenever you want an actual shape type, you can have shape type. And then when you're saying, well, it may not be there, then you have the nullable version. Mm. And it just made so much more sense. So it was really fun to rip up bits of the project and replace them and see other things just fall naturally into place.
That is nice. That's good for people to see that, because people's minds work that way, and it sort of gives them permission.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To change their minds.
Yes. The idea that you will plan everything ahead of time and just... every line of code you write will be right to start with.
It's a great idea.
It's just it's not going to happen. And if you're waiting until you think it's going to be right, then it's going to be awful. This is one of the points I'm going to make tomorrow when I finally got around to WPF. Mm. My first version, which I'll show because I've got a commit saying, right, this works, but boy, is it ugly. most of the actual logic for, now I need to draw that, now I need to draw this, is in a setter, a property setter that's doing all the actual work of the drawing. It's not nice, but I wanted to get something to get past the roadblock of I don't know how to structure this. I did this session in NDC, and we ended up with not very much code, but a really interesting session. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope the audience did. And for CodeMash, I said, well, how about this time I do a load of the code beforehand, and I think I'm still in two minds about exactly how I'm going to play it tomorrow. It kind of depends on how many people I have and whatever. So we might start again with a blank canvas and say, well, how do you think this should be structured? Mm. And play around with it for a bit and then go on to, well, this is what I've done, and we'll have a look and see what I've learned and things. But I now have the model, so one PCL, portable class library, with the model in, and that's the only thing that knows the business logic of Skeetris, which is the name of the project.
Because
can't be Tetris. copyright, trademark, whatever reasons, this is not Tetris, only Skeetris. So that's the only thing that understands the logic of this is how I turn a shape, this is what happens when I drop a shape, this is what happens if I make a line. Hmm. But I now have five clients for this.
They're all calling the same portable class library.
So all using the same PCL. So I have a WPF app. I have, thanks to your session the other day, I have a Windows Store app, which I tweeted this as I was doing it. I literally took the WPF app, copy and pasted all the code, and then just made the changes needed to compile. And it worked. I suspect in many cases it wouldn't, but with a few little tweaks,
it did work. It doesn't change that much.
Yeah. The one bizarre bit was capturing key down on a grid, which just didn't work at all. But anyway, leaving that aside. So that all works. So I've got WPF and Windows Store. Those are obviously pretty similar. I've got a console version.
Version of Tetris?
Yeah, as in text-based. So just you know, just printing blocks on the screen. It's really simple.
Okay.
And I have email Tetris. Skeetris. So you email the server saying new game, and it emails you back the board. And then if you don't do anything for 2 minutes, it emails you back the board with the shape dropped a tiny bit. And then you can reply saying, you know, right, left, down, you know,
interesting,
whatever. And I have something similar to that, but on Twitter. So I draw the board with some Unicode characters that that have a quarter of a block per character. Sorry. Four blocks per character, if you see what I mean. So I can just about get that into 140 characters, a whole grid. And again, you reply and say what you want to do with the things. And yeah, so I'll be demoing all of those and looking at, you know, taking some lessons from it. So all that copy and paste, where would it make sense to then say, I've clearly got common code. Does it make sense to try to have some abstraction? Or actually, am I perfectly happy maintaining two copies of the code?
What's the decision point? How do you make that determination?
Well, in this case, it's really easy. I'm probably never going to touch this code again. I'm not going to extract it out.
Okay.
I think the thing to do is do the copy and paste and then see where the commonality is. If I'd started off, so I had the email one and I knew that the Twitter one would look like it. So the options are copy everything and get it working in, I think that took me about an hour and a half. By the time I got the Twitter API working, doing the rest was like an hour and a half. Mm. Not a lot of work. Or I could have tried to work out all the bits of commonality, having only implemented one of it, you know, not done the Twitter bit yet,
right,
and guessed at where the seams are in that. And I'm sure I would have got it wrong, and it would have been several hours in, and I would have gone too tired, and it wouldn't be done now. Mm. So now that I've done both, I could put in the time and say, right, well, that's where I could have an interface and everything's going to be similar and there's another one. As it happens, I probably won't. But I'm going to get shouted at tomorrow, but saying that copy and paste isn't that bad. It's a valid way of doing things in some cases because you don't know what's coming yet.
Yep.
And in some cases because we're really awful as developers. We're sort of trained to find patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're trained too hard.
I think you're right.
There are two things that both have a bind method. They must be exactly the same, so they should have a base class. It's like, well, no, sometimes things look a bit similar, but it doesn't mean they're actually so similar that you want to bet on them being the same. So, yeah.
This reminds me of an experience I had when I was working on a team of two.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing the back end. I was doing I didn't have an ORM, so I was running the data access thing.
Uh-huh.
And my friend was building the front end and that was going to call this. And so I built a method to, you know, get all and get one and update and the CRUD, basic CRUD stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, here, it's all done. It's all ready to go. And I said, great. Where's the method to get by last name? Oh, I don't have that. So I went and wrote that.
Right.
And then he said, okay, where's the method to get by company name?
Yep.
Oh, I don't have that. But everything asked for, I didn't have. And there were about 30% of the ones I did write that never got called.
Absolutely.
And I think that's kind of the same situation you're talking about.
We try to plan ahead too much. and you can go to the other extreme as well. And in particular, I think you need to have a sort of mental backlog. You can keep track of it in a spreadsheet if you want, but you need to know the state of your code. Are there bits that you really, that nag you because they're just plain wrong? And the thing I did before I implemented the Twitter one was to go back to the email code and refactor the heck out of it because it was horrible. I was looking at this with Dustin Campbell, and there are about 25 using directives at the top, covering all kinds of stuff. There was threading, there was sending email, receiving email, drawing stuff. Basically, the whole thing was in one class. Yeah. You know, I had a couple of helper classes that just stored a bit of state, but everything else was in one class. It's like, how about I extract all the email stuff just to another class, call it email client, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't actually know anything about Skeetris. It's just fetching mails, marking them as read, and sending mails out. And it's like, right, that's nice and straightforward. And then something else that is able to render a game as an email. And extract those things out. And then I was in the point where I could see which bits of them roughly would correspond to what in Twitter. So the actual fairly badly named gameserver.cs is almost exactly the same between the two. It uses email client or Twitter client, depending. But the core bit of, well, first we need to see whether any games need to tick, you know, drop one level down. And if any of them do, then let's fetch the latest mails to see whether there's actually been something else. Or if it's time to poll the mail or Tetris anyway, then let's do that. And that's all very, very common code. So that hardly needed to change at all. But the other bits were by then isolated. So just that refactoring put me into a better state for when I do want to do some abstraction later on, but I still don't need to do it right away. So I think it's working out when it's the right time to refactor and when it's the right time, when you can really see that something is obviously an abstract class, fine. Or an interface.
So it seems like that moment when you realize that is when you've actually written the client code to call this abstract class that's going to, or this backend class.
I think a lot of that. Or
do you favor writing the front end first before the back end for that reason?
So I don't write apps normally. Okay. And you can really see that when you look at these clients. They are all about getting something functional that just about works and looks like a dog's dinner. It's horrible.
I thought the dog's dinner was good. Didn't we learn that last
year? Is it dog's breakfast? Dog's breakfast, bad. Why do dogs really have bad breakfasts and good dinners? So it's terrible UI, but part of the point is, you know, someone else can do that stuff. I've got this. If I want to change how the game plays, I do that in one place, and that affects all of them. And I've actually got one bit that I'll highlight as not being very good. If you say you get a long, thin block that could appear either horizontally or vertically. Suppose it appears horizontally to start with. It's right on the very, very top line. Can you rotate it or not? Because you sort of want to rotate about the middle of it, but that would put part of it off the grid.
Ah, I see.
So at the moment, actually quite often, you can't rotate until something's dropped down a few times. And that kind of plays a little oddly, but I'm not sure what the alternative is. But if I ever take the time to really think this out, I only need to fix in one place, and that will just fix all the clients just automatically because they are really, really dumb. And the other point is that the model stuff is all really easy to test. Doesn't mean it's actually tested. I have spent very, very little time on the tests, but I have some tests. I have a separate testing package. I'm trying to partly show this is how I would do things, give enough of a sketch of what the real thing would look like.
The actual 60 minutes, so there's a amount you can do.
The actual production code, I think, is in a fairly good shape. I've done testing until I'm bored with it, until fear turns to boredom, as they say. And I'm not particularly afraid that there are bugs in the main production code now, just because there's really not that much to it. And particularly because it's functional and I don't need to worry about thread safety and things. It makes the code really quite simple to read. So I don't have many tests, but I do have a testing package with, well, what would make it easier to test? It would be quite nice if, just for the unit tests, we could dump a board out as ASCII art. You know, this it looks nothing like the console version, because this isn't in color or whatever. It's just using a different symbol for every shape type or whatever.
Sure.
But then I can have a test that says, okay, I should start off with a grid like this and then drop this shape, drop that shape, and I should end up with a board that looks like this. So I can parse, I don't think I can parse a board, but I can say the board, when converted to ASCII art, should look like this.
I see.
And it can say, oh no, actually it looks like that. And you say, well, I've dropped it in the wrong place. I'm not, having tried that a bit, I'm not sure it's exactly the right way of testing it. But it gives a flavor of writing a bit more code that makes all testing easier and would also make testing the clients easier if I don't have any unit tests for any of the clients.
Sure, yeah.
Partly because that's really hard, actually.
It's inherently a visual application.
Yes.
And so it's hard to imagine a test that doesn't include the UI.
Right. And if the idea is to make the client code as dumb as possible, the only things it's doing are drawing.
Right.
It's not responsible for working out what should happen if I try to move something and it's already at the edge of the board or whatever. Right. So the more you can put into the bit that doesn't have a UI, the easier it is. Now, I'm far from, because I don't write apps, I basically only write libraries. At work, I write backend code, and that's generally relatively easy to test. For hobbies, I write Node Time, which is a date and time library. Again, relatively straightforward to test. So I don't know all the ins and outs of how you do go about UI testing, and I'm sure smarter people than me have figured out all kinds of good ways of doing that. I just play the game.
Talk to Jim Holmes, you know
right,
that stuff.
Right. So I'm sure there are ways to do it, but I suspect that even the slickest way of doing it is still, if you can avoid having to test something, or having to test something in a difficult way by putting it into the more testable, more easily testable model code, then that's
yes.
great.
Yes. Anything we haven't covered we should?
Just, I guess there are two other clients I want to write for this that I will probably write, Android and iOS. I haven't mentioned anything mobile. It's
and
like,
use,
this is 2014.
You'll use Xamarin.
I do use Xamarin. So, yeah. I have thoroughly enjoyed. I have exactly two bits of Apple kit, which are a Mac Mini and an iPad. Mm-hmm. And these are purely for the sake of Xamarin. It's crazy how much hardware I spent, how much I've spent on hardware just to be able to just tinker. It's not like I have any real applications coming out of this. So my current applications that I've done with Xamarin are all about Node Time. So it was checking that. It's amazing how well it works. You start a new project and you say, I want this NuGet package. And Node Time has a PCL version and it just imports there. And then you just go and write the app. So I've written one app for both iOS and Android, which gives you a list of time zones. And you click on a time zone, it shows you the transitions when it goes between daylight saving time and standard time for like between 2000 and 2020.
Okay, so and you've got an API for this library. Node Time? What is
Node Time.
N-O-D-A?
N-O-D-A, so it's like Joda Time is in Java, and Node Time is the .NET version.
Oh, I see, okay.
Or at least that's,
right,
that's
so
sort of where
you're
it started.
You're taking what you learned from that API and applying it to something that's a little bit harder, a little bit less testable in this Skitris application.
Yeah, so I will go for this for Xamarin for that. Yeah, currently I've only got these Node Time things and haven't written any tests for the Xamarin part of it because I know so little about both Android and iOS. It's all very much just prototyping at the moment.
Right.
But it feels like I really ought to. It would be a waste not to write Skitris for those two.
Totally a waste, absolutely. What are you going to do with that time between 9 p.m. and 5 a.m.?
So yeah,
you're wasting on sleeping these days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Sleeping is for wusses. Yeah, so that should be a lot of fun to learn from. Although, of course, I've got naturally all the other clients have an obvious input method. You know, replying to an email or a tweet or the keyboard. Well, you're on a mobile, and I thought you could swing your phone left and right and drop your phone when you want to drop the shape. I'm not sure that
drop
would be.
Drop your phone.
Yeah, it would be interesting to demo it. You know, once. But not so great. So I might have an on-screen little control pad or something.
Ah, there you go. I think it's a little safer.
Aside from anything else, yeah, just this is proof of concept stuff. But Xamarin is a joy to use. It's amazing that it works at all. When I have my Mac Mini just as the build machine for Xamarin. So I'm on Visual Studio in Windows, and it does part of the build on that Windows box, ships the rest over to the Mac Mini that finishes the build, and then deploys to my iPad. And then I can do debugging in Visual Studio to the Mac, and then via USB to the iPad. It's
very
like,
cool.
And it still works. It's incredible that it works
at all.
It's magic.
They have some smart people on that Xamarin.
Oh, yeah.
And you have an online presence, right?
Well, I've got Stack Overflow.
Well, that's your online presence. Okay, that's your blog.
Yeah, I have csharpindepth.com.
For your book, C-Sharp in Depth.
Yes, so it's sort of a mixture of supporting the book, so it's got downloads and things, and it's got various articles and bits and pieces, and I've got a blog on msmvps.com, which I don't blog about often enough, but I now have a blog post to write about a puzzler that Dustin Campbell gave during his session this morning that I have solved now. Yeah. Oh, so we've got one that we haven't solved yet, but there was one that Dustin posed earlier on, which I'm proud to say did manage to get. And I shall be blogging about that on the plane on the way home.
I look forward to it.
Cool.
John, thank you so much.
Great to see you. The great thing about what we do is, whether you have friends in technology or not, you can pretty much guarantee that all your friends use technology. So just think about all the lives that you can be making better right now with whatever technology you happen to build. See if your friends will use it.